Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Monday, the 11th of December. Lovely to have you with us on this cold and still probably snowy where you are morning. It's very nice to have you with us as you try to keep warm and we get ready for another little blast of snow. And we have a lot to talk about as well. We have a wonderful panel assembled and we'll get to that. A reminder that you can join in on the conversation by simply writing to us. panel@wamc.org Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Hi, Joe. I went to all these wonderful parties over the weekend, and everywhere I went, people told me, you are so lucky to have Joe Donahue at WAMC. And I said, yes, indeed. I'm telling you, a lot of people. So so that's very good. But
Did they ask you the question that everybody asked me this weekend?
What's he really like?
What's Alan really like?
No, they only ask that question when they want a bad answer.
No, my answer is I've worked for him for 23 years. So doesn't that give you, like, I've always found my
have your place.
I have one other thing to say, and that is I have a particular gripe. I was in a store this weekend and they were playing Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Well, let's face it, you're gonna have the Christmas music, like it or not, you're gonna get it, so get ready.
The Gene Autry.
It was not.
Oh,
and
okay.
That was my down thing. I mean, you don't want anybody singing White Christmas except for Bing Crosby.
That's
and
right.
You don't want anybody singing Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer except for Gene Autry. And of course there's a lot of people say, Gene Autry, who's that? But, you know, I mean, there are certain levels of comfort in this.
I think
this
Liz
society.
Is looking it up right now.
I do want a ban on this thing.
I'm sorry, is David's mic? Hold on, David. Is your mic not working? Try it again. Is yours on?
There you go. On?
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, I'm with Alan.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. You're good. I see what happened.
He's with me on these two songs.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
I don't want any more remixes on Christmas songs. This Senate, you know, the House and the President should all agree that we cannot have remixes, new versions of Rudolph. It's too much for me.
And please say Merry Christmas.
Yes. Mandatory.
David Sors is with us. He is the district attorney for Albany County. We are thrilled.
And the music critic.
And that's right. And we're thrilled that he is with us every week and with us this morning. So thank you, David. I appreciate it. Teresa Bourgeois is with us. She is a communications consultant, and we always love seeing you. Thank you very much for being here.
And I'm delighted to be here. I want to give a shout out to the mayor of Albany and all the wonderful people who organized the Saturday night run and the lights in the park. I didn't get to run it, but I got to watch it. And what a beautiful job they do. They have fireworks at the base of the Capitol in front of City Hall, which is just beautiful. And they had snow, but the pace setter in the race was a plow, which you don't see very often in a running race, but they did a wonderful job to make that happen.
Did they have Christmas music along the path?
I'm sure they did. I didn't make it along the path, but I'm sure they did.
You know, I have to say, I don't know, they've been doing it for, 20 years, the holiday lights in the park, and I've never done it. I don't know why. I live here every day. I go by it every night when I go pick up my wife, and I've never done it.
The Chartocks came from Great Barrington to do it one year.
Isn't it lovely?
Now, last year, I was at a holiday party downtown at the Fort Orange Club, and then Kelly and I came through, and we went through, and we went to it, and oh my God, it was lovely.
Isn't it lovely?
Just beautiful.
Probably people outside of Albany don't know what we're talking about. But.
I've noticed now two people out of the four talking about all these parties. Parties in the weekend, this one's partying at the Fort Orange Club.
I'm partying in the snow at Albany. Yeah. Yeah. Albany watching fireworks
well,
with a broken
arm. Joe really is a social guy. I mean, right. He does, you know,
well,
he knows.
Don't
Everybody wants Joe around, but for us to get invited to a party, that's rare.
You have to have a lot of commitments around this time of year, don't you?
You make it sound like that's not a commitment, that it's a festive party. You know?
Yeah. Well, that's because I'm on the radio to try to make it sound good.
Oh, my goodness.
I think I feel like
I
the rest of you
break.
Do.
Fair play.
All right. Let's move on to what's happening in the world. And, we've been talking about it for a very, very long time, and tomorrow is the day. Tomorrow is the day that Alabama residents go to the polls and decide on who will be their senator.
I know Liz can find the song I'm Alabama Bound. Go ahead.
Okay. All right.
We may all be Alabama bound.
Yeah. Well. So this is all turning out to be well. It's always been disturbing. It's always been weird. And now over this weekend, we see the senior Republican senator of Alabama saying he's not fit to be a senator in our state. We see a lot of high profile Democrats, i.e. Cory Booker, showing up in the state. And you also have the president of the United States going around campaigning for Roy Moore. Go get him, Roy. And so it all comes down to tomorrow and really who gets out the vote, what the result of write-in votes is, from my understanding. And I think there are 17 polls, and they're all over the place.
Can't poll this one, I don't think.
No. Yeah,
I think you can poll it, and I think I know what's going to happen. Moore is going to win. And I think we have to be ready for that, that this deep, deep, deep red state is going to be consistent with the way that they've always been. You have the president of the United States on the telephone in everybody's house saying, if you want my kind of government, and remember that South Carolina went for him big time, you gotta vote this guy in, because otherwise those liberals will be controlling the Senate. And then you have a certain percentage of people, it was once 10%, I don't know what it is now, saying, I don't know what I'm gonna do yet. And as I have often said, those are people with something to hide, maybe like white sheets over their heads.
But there are people who have said it's one thing to have an out-of-state liberal like Cory Booker come in and campaign.
Deval Patrick.
It's quite another for the senior GOP senator of the state, who, from my understanding, is widely liked and respected within the state, to come out and make a national television appearance and really excoriate the guy and say that he has no place in office in the state of Alabama.
And to have the Democratic opponent now take that and make it into a robocall.
That's true. Whether or not it makes a difference, I don't know. I've watching the Vice News that conducted a little focus group and having these conversations with them, I was pulling out what's left of the hair on my head just listening to the people rationalize their decisions to support this person. You know, blaming the victim, talking about the length of time that's passed. I think there's been a tremendous disservice, you know, with respect to the false, basically putting the issues that have happened to, for example, Franken and a lot of the Me Too movement and Weinstein, basically putting all of these issues together and giving those people that I think would have been offended, you know, 3 weeks ago, giving them license now to give themselves permission to go out and vote for Roy Moore.
The false equivalency. Yeah.
Well, also, and I think it was a point that was made yesterday by the senator of saying that
Shelby.
Of saying, okay, even if you remove that the allegations of the sexual abuse and sexual harassment, you still have a very flawed candidate.
Well,
you still have a very troubling man who has been removed from the bench twice.
Yeah. Twice.
There is that, and I think in the messaging it seems to be now that they are making that point. As people go to discredit the accusers, which in and of itself is very disturbing, but they're also making the case that this would have been a very problematic race even without those allegations.
But, you know, one of the things that I'm interested in is, as you know, Trump endorsed the other guy in the primary, and the people didn't buy it. So at least there's a little bit of indication that, you know, that they are not going to take his absolute commands on everything.
It feels like we're watching a crazy, cynical show on television where There are two prosecutors, right, that are vying for a position, two former prosecutors. One who decided in his mid-30s that he's going to hit on a child who's a victim in his courthouse, and the other who has basically put away racist and been a stellar crime fighter. And there's actually a race. I mean,
it's hard to imagine that there really is. And not only did this did Roy Moore pursue 14-year-old girls and young girls, he's also said that women shouldn't be allowed to run for public office. He has said
that a Muslim
who has been duly elected in Minnesota by his constituents should not be allowed to be seated in the U.S. House of Representatives. He said, and you know, we don't know the details yet, but this bombing in New York City, he said of 9/11, and I don't have the quote right in front of me, but essentially said that that was God, you know, telling them that
punishing
them for behaving badly. Well, he said disparaging things about the shooting of the kids in Sandy Hook. I mean, he's removed from the court, from the judgeship twice. He hasn't campaigned once or twice in the last week because he can't go out and campaign.
I'm wondering if other folks from Alabama also agree that we should just do away with everything after the 10th Amendment.
Oh my God. I mean, that was the other one, like picking and choosing the amendments of the Constitution that you're going to support. You're a federal judge.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
One of the things I'm wondering, and particularly with Shelby's statements, do some people make the calculation that they vote for him, he comes in, and then he gets removed, and then they put somebody else in? I think some people, and I think that make the calculation that it's okay because we just want a Republican in the seat, they're going to oust him anyway, and then they'll put a Republican back in. A different Republican that'll be okay as long as we hold it as a Republican.
I don't think
seat.
So. I think
he may not win, though. I'm not 100% sure that I don't think polling works in this race in either direction. I don't know that he wins.
I think it's a red, red, red state, as I've said. And I think that that you don't have to go to second and third level of analysis, which you've just done brilliantly, because I don't think it matters to a lot of people. I just think they say, hey, we're not going to let those Yankees kick us around. The Civil War isn't over yet, you know, and we're going to just do our thing.
But here, Alan, here's one thing I was wondering. So there's even in the New York Times, the way they wrote the headline and the stories, you know, they're talking about liberals coming in and trying to dictate the race. But why aren't they talking about conservatives? You know, they don't say that Bannon coming in from outside or all of the Republican conservatives coming in from outside trying to influence the race. It's totally inconsistent.
You mean Bannon, the former Goldman Sachs employee, former Hollywood, from California producer, executive producer?
There's no headline about him coming in from outside trying to influence the race. But Cory Booker and Deval Patrick go down and preach in churches, and it's these liberals coming in from the outside to try to influence a race.
But we're living in a time where facts just don't matter, right? And does it matter here in Alabama? Right. I mean, consider the fact that you're talking about a pedophile who managed to become judge, you know, two times in a state and had to be removed two times because he substitutes his own, you know,
where the president of the United States went to the teen pageant and walked in on teenagers and, you know, and gets elected.
But, Teresa, both of these guys, you know, Moore and the president, have hit upon a brilliant strategy. They say it never happened. And because they say it never happened, there are a lot of voters, don't write me letters, don't be writing me letters, everybody, but there are a lot of voters who are going to say, that's good enough for me.
Yeah, and that's sad. That's truly, truly sad because especially for me, I mean, I've watched what happened to Al Franken last week, and I'm saying to myself, wait a second. I mean, I'm part of a system where there's a presumption of innocence and you're
right.
There's the right to confrontation and, you know, there's due process. And boy, we're taking a flamethrower, you know, to due process. Right.
Well, I think Saturday Night Live, I don't think the skit was great, but their opening skit,
stunk.
I thought, okay, yeah, it was. But the point that they were trying to make, I think, is an important one. how do you talk to your children about this? And I've talked to a couple friends that have this, you know, how do you explain this to children? How do you explain right and wrong?
Okay, but the funniest line of that was, is he on the naughty list? No, it's more of a registry.
That's right. Parts of it were good. There were some good lines.
It was a good Kate McKinnon line.
There were some good lines. But I think the overall point that they were trying to make is an important one, is how do you explain this whole thing to your kids? And Trump, go on a campaign in Pensacola. What, you know, which is in the same media market. I can't remember what the city in Alabama, I'm sorry to say right now, but why didn't he just go to Alabama? So now he says, well, I didn't go there to campaign, but he was right on the border.
Obviously,
it's ridiculous.
All right, let's take a break, and we will be back. We'll continue our conversation. Also, we'll find out and talk a little bit more about the New York City explosion that we're working with as well. We'll have all of that after the short break.
You know Dasher and Dancer and Prancer and Vixen, Comet and Cupid and Donner and Blitzen, but do you recall the most famous reindeer of all? Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer had a very shiny nose, and if you ever saw it, you would even say it glows. All of the other reindeer used to laugh and call him names. They never let poor Rudolph join in any reindeer games.
You know, I was just listening to that, though, in Trump America, calling him, laughing, calling him names, that's okay.
Melania's on that. Melania's on that.
Thank God.
Yeah,
thank God. Gene Autry, that's the version. That's the quintessential version. The only one we should.
It's the only one I acknowledge.
All right. I understand.
It is beautiful.
I want to get back. We have some letters. I just want to bring people up to date. Two of Manhattan's busiest subway stations were evacuated after an explosion at 42nd and 8th Avenue. It is Times Square. Of course, this is the busiest season of the year in New York. And during rush hour, a blast emptied the New York Transit Hub. A suspect that had an explosive device strapped to him is being held. Four injuries have been reported, and their city officials are expected to be giving an update momentarily, and we'll have more information on that as soon as it becomes available. But again, the suspect is in custody, and the original report I heard was that only the suspect, the mommer, was the person who was injured, although they are now reporting that there are four injuries now. The suspect is in serious condition. The other injuries believed to be non-life-threatening. So that is what we are following this morning. Always concerning and very close to home for all of us, so we will stay on that for you. Let's go to some letters. We welcome yours. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org will be, and then we welcome your letters. So just write to that, and you get letters like this.
Like this. Voter suppression. Good morning, panel.
Good morning.
A big issue in Alabama is voter suppression.
Indeed.
An approved ID card required. A large number of motor vehicle offices where a card may be obtained have been closed in predominantly Afro-American communities. And that's from Rich.
Indeed, Rich.
Yep.
Well, I continue to speak in the community about these issues because living today, people are becoming more cynical about voting. And, you know, if voting wasn't so important, then why do we have this aggressive push? Billions of dollars being spent all over these states to suppress the vote.
So in the last presidential election that Obama ran in, he got a huge Afro-American vote.
Mm-hmm.
The real question is, when you have this kind of a race going on, will it match that Obama search?
Well, I think over the weekend you saw Deval Patrick, Cory Booker, and a number of other high-profile elected and former elected officials venture into Alabama to try to stir up and get the black vote out.
And they said the preachers in Alabama were really trying to focus on urging people to vote. So we'll see what happens.
Carl says, Monday morning, how did we develop this culture of taunting people? Bumper stickers, flags, epithets, voting for bad candidates. Too many people make their choices to try and upset other people. With holiday music, please don't forget, lots of people want to sing these songs, not just listen to the originals. And that's Carl. And you know, folks, I know that the most unlikely things that we say on the panel become the thread that everybody follows for the rest of the program. Do you know what I'm Do you hear what I'm saying here?
I do.
Well, people can sing Rudolph. You're just saying sing along with Gene Autry.
Well, that's exactly what I'm saying. And I'm saying
you
anybody
can sing
else
a few bars right now.
Anybody else?
But you know what's great though about these classics is that this generation or whatever generation perhaps wouldn't otherwise know Gene Autry or Bing Crosby or Mel Torme or Rosemary Clooney or Burl Ives. Brenda Lee, absolutely, who have just done these amazing songs and are part of our cultural holiday cultural events. So I think that it's nice to have them in the mix.
Yeah, for those of us who were born pre-cable, pre-internet.
Yeah.
We watch the same Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer Christmas specials on ABC and then CBS year after year after year.
We couldn't watch them whenever we wanted to. We had to. It was a point of television.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And so for me, when I listen to, you know, that particular version, it takes me back to my childhood. Now, sure. I just happen to be one of these people that will shop at your Target or other stores locally, and I hear these new versions of Christmas songs, and I'm like, I got to get out of here.
No, it's wrong. Good morning, panel.
Yes.
Good morning.
Good morning, everyone.
I keep hearing the news and the media refer to what Moore is accused of as sexual misconduct. Call it what it is, pedophilia. Sexual misconduct makes it sound like a minor infraction. What he did was go after children, which is disgusting and reprehensible, and thank you, and that's from Maximilian.
Please do not see this in any way, shape, or form as a defense. However, because there are victims who are both underage and of age, the blanket term that I think of sexual misconduct applies here because there it is both. There were women who were 18, 19 years old who also spoke out as well. Absolutely right, as children. So yes, there are pedophilia charges, but there are also sexual harassment charges.
Amazing that a person is a candidate for the U.S. Senate who they had a concern that if he does get elected, what about the pages, the young people who work in the Senate?
I mean,
it's ridiculous.
We grazed it earlier and saying that. Because 2-3 weeks ago, we were talking about this last time where you were here, David. 2 or 3 weeks ago, we were talking about how they weren't going to seat him in the Senate, and then the Republicans weren't going to support him, and now all that's gone.
Donald Trump's campaigning for him.
And Donald Trump is campaigning for him. So we have no reason to believe that if this guy wins tomorrow, that he won't be seated.
Let's talk about Shelby for a minute. This is a very interesting person who has really come out seriously against Moore's candidacy. He's the senior senator. He's beloved in his state. And he is, he's a conservative Republican. Let's face it. There's no two ways about
it. Very, very conservative.
But he said, this is where the line gets drawn between what's political and what's right. And we have so few politicians who do that.
That's true. And while I may not agree with him, he doesn't need the greater Republican establishment to support him. And from what I understand, he is a dye-in-the-wool, loyal candidate who's very, very strong and is out in some of the more rural areas where his base of power is from. And I think that's what gives him the confidence to step forward and to say what he said.
Okay, so if you're a Christian evangelical and you hear Shelby coming out this way, this strongly, as a man of principle, a profile in courage? And are you saying you're being betrayed, or are you saying, I wonder whether I should listen to him?
I think people are going to listen to him because he's a credible person. He's not on the in front of a camera every week. He's not one of these individuals who you see on Fox News 3 days a week. He's very reclusive, and I think he just goes out and does his job.
This is one of the few, if ever, times he's ever been on a national Sunday news show.
I think that's going to count. I think it's going to count and resonate with some
Republicans. If Roy Moore wins, will it count with his constituents in the Senate when it comes to seating Roy Moore?
They'll seat Roy Moore if he wins. And the reality is, I think over the course of the last 2 weeks where you've seen more Democrats, Conyers and Franken, and you've seen so much coverage over the number of people that are coming out and making the accusations against them, that's given the Republicans more permission to get closer to Moore as this race has come down to the wire.
Okay, that's very
troubling. I don't understand that.
Yeah.
But
It's the false equivalence.
I think it's
the false equivalence.
I think the key here is the President of the United States. And the other thing is, as somebody said to me yesterday, the more... For the president, the more he's talking about Roy Moore and the more he gets people to focus on that race, the less they're focusing on the substance of the tax bill, the less they're focusing on the substance of a budget bill. And so he wins. The more Donald Trump can keep people focused on this kind of stuff, on whether it's the football players or it's Roy Moore's behavior or whatever it is, and not focused on the substance of the tax bill and the substance of the budget, he's winning.
But there's one more thing here. Let's remember what the robocalls from the president are saying. I need his vote in the United States Senate. It's too close. I need his vote. You can't deprive me of that. So for all those people who are saying, okay, when it comes up to being in the Senate, the senators won't seat him, forget it. They're going to chicken out the same way they've chickened out on everything else. When it's Trump and a potential for a primary, they're going to do what they're told.
Well, maybe, but I still think to what David was saying about if and you said it too, actually, Alan, about a profile in courage and somebody saying something, and hopefully people will do what is right.
I have no doubt in my mind that when it comes down to deciding the issues involved in this tax bill and passing this tax bill, they're not going to do what's right. They're going to do what's in their best interest, which is the reason why this particular race is drawing so much attention. I mean, let's be real. If the Republicans, you know, had the Senate controlled by 6 or 7 seats and they felt pretty confident, we wouldn't be talking about Roy Moore. But they need Roy Moore. And they need Roy Moore in order to fulfill the agenda of this particular president.
Can I say one more thing, Joe, really quickly?
Yes.
Really quickly.
Go.
Okay. And that is, if you haven't got the WAMC app yet, get it. You can hear us all over the place. You can hear us in New York City. There's nothing like this in New York City. And you can hear it anywhere else. So it's WAMC.org and get the WAMC app.
We will continue our conversation about all of the issues of the day and include your letters, panel@WAMC.org, after this short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Ye Olde Warwick Bookshop, Warwick and Greenwood Lake, a bookseller specializing in new and vintage books as well as holiday gift ideas. YeOldWarwickBookshop.com. Adams Fairacre Farms, Poughkeepsie, Kingston, Newburgh, and Wappinger. Fresh trees, hand-decorated wreaths, tree ornaments, Adams-grown poinsettias in multiple colors and more. AdamsFarms.com. Manchester, Vermont, a day trip destination offering culture, scenery, farm-to-table cuisine, and events to celebrate the holiday season. Visit ManchesterVermont.com for more details. Lofgren Peck Insurance, since 1946, offering insurance for homes, autos, farms, businesses, and lives, as well as supporting public radio in the Hudson Valley, Berkshires, and Northeast Connecticut. LofgrenAgency.com. And from the Rosenblum Companies, providing customizable office spaces, on-site parking, and hands-on property management, to Great Oaks Office Park, located at the intersection of I-90 and I-87. GreatOaksOfficePark.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us, Alan Chartok, David Soares, the Albany County District Attorney and Communications Consultant, Teresa Bourgeois, with us. And we're thrilled to have such a wonderful panel and thrilled to have you involved in the conversation as well. Panel at WAMC.org. We have a couple of letters and we'll move on to other topics.
Good morning, panel.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I would like to hear David Soares' views on the concealed carry reciprocity bill that passed the House. What actions might New York take if it also passes the Senate? What about states' rights?
This is why we love having you here, sir. Yeah. And why I know you love being here.
Yeah, carry. That's we're going to be a nation of armed civilians, and boy,
isn't there still a Sullivan law?
Listen, I think it's going to pass. I mean, I think it's going to pass, and I think it's we're going to. And you know what? It is a little foolish that we live in a system right now where if you live in a state where you're permitted and you're carrying a weapon and you're doing so lawfully, if you go over the border, you know, you're all of a sudden operating outside the bounds of the law. And so to have that kind of consistent framework throughout the country is something that I as a member of law enforcement, I don't frown upon that. Now, what I do want there to be consideration for is that if you're in a particular state that makes it easy, you know, where there's a lot of rigorous in the state of New York, it's pretty rigorous to get a weapon, especially permit that allows you to carry and conceal. The judges are involved, and you go through a hearing, and it's very in-depth. I don't think it's that way in other states.
And even so, out in West Virginia, it's a little easier.
Yeah, I think they toss it at you, you know, along with a free can of Diet Pepsi if you purchase enough. But you know, I think if we see consistency throughout the country.
That's not where I get my Pepsi, by the way. Yeah.
I think if we see consistency throughout the country, then I don't have a problem for it. I don't have a problem with it.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Why? You look shocked when he said
that.
Oh,
my goodness.
Why?
I'm horrified by this.
You are?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, because I'm yeah. Absolutely.
You're easily horrified?
About guns, except for if they're for hunting. But first of all, just so astounding to me that after 500 people are gunned down in Las Vegas, the first legislative response is more guns in more places.
And on the anniversary, by the way.
And on the anniversary of Sandy Hook.
Yeah. Sandy Hook. Yeah.
And on the anniversary of Sandy Hook, where children were gunned down in their classrooms, little children. And what this country's response is to what I would consider violate states' rights. These are all, you know, these are states' rights people, unless they're not. And that's what I tweeted about this. That's what I tweeted about this, at T. Bush. You're, you know, all you conservatives, you're all states' rights people, unless you're not. And so this doesn't work for you, so all of a sudden you're not states' rights people. This is more guns concealed where people say we don't want it. I think it's abhorrent. We can't have protections against bump stocks, but you can increase concealed carry weapons. Maybe there's something I don't understand about this, but.
Well, you understand the sociology of the country, don't you? In other words, you understand that this is a gun-toting country. And that guns are on.
And that's our problem.
And they've accepted the mythology that if you got a gun on you and somebody comes up and busts into your house or something like that, you'll have that gun and you could kill them.
But not every state has accepted it. And so why do the states who say no have to acquiesce to the states? If you're going to go to a different state, just leave your gun behind.
But So I'm a constitutional officer, okay? So I can have my own personal opinion, but as a constitutional officer, as a prosecutor, as a district attorney, I have to obey the law. And you know, we have privileges in this country where it allows for people to carry weapons, right? I'm so troubled by the volume of illegal weapons that are out in the community. Just this past weekend, in partnership with St. Peter's Victory Church and the gun guy here in Albany, we've done buybacks, right? We're up to about 83 in 2 weeks between Troy and Albany. And that's just We're just scratching the surface.
Tip of the iceberg.
That's the tip of the iceberg. So there are a lot of illegal weapons. These illegal weapons end up coming into our states because we have such porous laws in other states. And so if this is a mechanism, right, that would elevate the standards in other states to the same standards as, for example, the state of New York, right, then I think that ultimately that would be good. But, you know, I think people still have that personal choice. And I also think that here in New York, we tend to have an East Coast or city-centric perspective, you know, on guns. I think when you travel the country like I did and you're in a place like South Dakota and, you know, it's 20 minutes between gas stations and, you know, if you're calling for 911 and services, it's not a 6-minute, you know, response time like you would have in the city of Albany or a 3-minute response time in Colony and Guilderland. It's more like an hour and a half. And so it's a very different issue in some parts of this country.
Right. Well, I worked for a congressman from who represented rural Michigan, the northern part of the Michigan, 26 very rural counties. And guns were very much a part of the culture in hunting and responsible gun ownership. But, you know, not high-powered weapons, not anyway.
Well, it's this idea of a concealed weapon. Doesn't that change a culture and a psychology that now, as you walk through wherever, you assume that somebody has a gun now?
Yeah, I'll tell you what. It's here.
I don't already assume that. But, yeah. But I mean, doesn't that...
It's here. It's here. We have that culture now. It, like you said, I mean, but, look, you can only go... 10 years ago, if we had an incident like we had in Las Vegas, the response would have ultimately been different.
500 now, people.
Yeah.
500 people at one event. More than 500 people gunned down.
But don't you think, David, that there will be people who ordinarily would not have had a gun, a concealed weapon, who once the imprimatur of the government or the courts is on this or the Senate and House is on this, will go out and get themselves a gun? Won't it proliferate, in other words?
I still think it's a very, very personal choice. And I'll just say this. Look, I'm in some of the most, you know, challenged communities, and I don't have one. And I... That's a very, very for me to go out there and you know, seek one would be a very deeply personal choice. I've contemplated it over the years, given, you know, threats that I receive from time to time. I'm not there yet, and I think for a lot of people, I still think that there's a lot of people that aren't there yet. But I think when we have events like we're seeing today, where you see a lot of soft targets, you know, for example, in New York City. I think those issues drive people.
But you have a crowd. You add these guns to the mix. I mean, that we're changing the culture in the wrong direction.
I agree with you.
When I worked in urban violence in Boston, the problem was just what you were talking about. Too many kids with too many guns, where before it was fist fights or knife fights, now it's gun fights and then stray bullets. You know, I was there when the aftermath of the kids shooting and a bullet went through the window and it killed an elderly woman sitting in her chair looking out the window, you know, or the kid on the mailbox get killed in a drive-by that had nothing to do. Too many guns.
We see it here.
Too many hands.
And let me just draw to further your point. We had and I won't embarrass I won't name the establishment, but last year we had an incident in Albany County at one of our very public spaces where two people ran into each other at a very public place and one began shooting in a crowded environment. Now, consider that for a moment, where you have first responders that are heading to the scene that are trained professionals that understand how to deal with those issues. And now you have, you know, people that are not. I mean, picture the horror coming out of that environment.
I've seen the horror. That's why I feel so. And I am fine with people hunting, just not hunting people. You know, that's what I'm not fine with. I've seen the horror. I've seen the aftermath. I spent 3 years in Boston working on urban violence. So when you have to come in after something horrific has happened, and it changes everybody's lives forever.
Yeah.
Let's pause there. When we come back, we will move on to other issues and continue our conversation. Alan Chartok, David Soares, Teresa Bourgeois, I'm Joe Donahue. We welcome your comments. Panel at WAMC.org. Ray Graff with news after this. I know Ray updated the story, but just as we said, we are following the case in New York City and the what the New York City mayor says is that this is, was a, an attempted terrorist attack that one a man wearing a homemade device set it off at Port Authority bus terminal near Times Square. A 27-year-old suspect, his names, his motive remain unclear. Four people injured, including the suspect. None of those are life-threatening, according to officials who finished up a news conference just a few moments ago. So obviously we'll have more on the story, and Brian will have more on it at midday as well as top of the hour. Alan, let's go to some letters, and then we'll move on to other topics.
Okay. Janet says, Dear panel, what is your intention in referring to the infinitely disgusting Roy Moore's prey as, quote, children? They were teenage girls, not children, except in possibly a strictly legal sense. This is not an, to excuse his conduct in any way, but I object to the manipulative, inflammatory use of words like children when they're not appropriate, and that's from...
14 years old isn't a child?
I object to a assistant district attorney going after and preying on a 14-year-old who is there because there's some, you know, problem that their family is dealing with.
Less than half his age.
Yeah.
14 years old is a child.
14 years old. I'm sorry.
You can vote. You can drive.
14 years old.
14, you're a child.
You're a child.
You're a child.
You're a child.
Right? And,
let's be very clear.
And what was the great hashtag that was started up about 14?
Yeah, where they showed what they looked
like when they were 14. These
right.
are kids.
These are kids.
These are children.
He was an assistant district attorney. He had, I mean, as Senator Lindsey Graham said, you know, if I think it was him, you know, if you're you know, banned from the mall, you probably shouldn't be in the U.S. Senate.
This is so egregious, and I was going to make the point earlier, but I think Joe covered it very well. When you're talking about the 14 in particular, you're talking about sexual misconduct, right? And you can call them, you know, pedophile. You can call the person a pedophile. But as the ages change and the number of people mount and they're in different categories, you have to use a different label, quite honestly. Me, I'm offended when you have people that are racist and organizations that are racist, and we refer to them as alt-right, almost as if we need to find a label that sort of rationalizes the, you know, the behavior.
And, instead of, you know, racist or hate,
yeah,
group.
Let's right. call so Ray Moore is a pedophile. If you vote for Ray Moore, you are voting for a pedophile. Plain and simple.
Who also doesn't think women should hold public office, who also, you know, doesn't think Muslims, he has a religious test for whether or not you hold public office,
And my new personal favorite, the amendments, let's trim them back. Let's go back to 10.
Doesn't respect the
Constitution. Let's go back to before the Civil War.
Yeah.
Okay. Good morning, panel. Happy Monday to all.
Good morning.
Good morning, as always, thank you for the fine conversation and insightful thoughts. It seems there's strong belief in Alabama that a vote for a Democrat is a vote for abortion. Therefore, all issues look to be off the table. In my opinion, this is both scary and shameful, and that's from Tom and Slingerlands.
Except for appears, if you follow Roy Moore, that he's focused on life from conception to birth. But after that, not so much, you know. So let's be clear about these evangelicals and how deeply they—not them. I didn't mean to say that as a group, but about his position. Look at the kinds of things that he's for and against, and, you know. Anyway, go ahead.
But Teresa,
I don't want to interrupt the letter.
But no. But Teresa, you make a very good point. But if you're studying politics, which we all are, then you realize that there are certain keywords which are repeated Goebbels-like again and again and again and which take off. And abortion is certainly one of those. So, you know, we know that that's the case. It is you can answer intellectually as you just have, but that's the way they do it.
I understand that's what they're running on. I just think that you have to question their commitment to the full life of a child, and that's what
well,
I do.
Couldn't agree with you.
And
I
if
couldn't
you
agree
look,
with you
what's,
more.
What it, you know, we don't know yet what's in these budget proposals, but if they're going to deal with the, you know, the cutbacks that are going to be required from the tax proposals, I can assure you that there are going to be deep cuts in Medicaid. There are going to be deep cuts in Medicare. There's going to be cuts in the food programs. There's going to be cuts in funding for research. The person who was awarded the Nobel Prize went in his speech last night in Stockholm. What did he talk about? The scientist. He talked about the problems now in the United States in their abandoning the commitment to basic research around health issues. Right. So are you for, you know, the healthy children or you're not? Are you for pre-K?
Got it.
Are you for education?
Paul Ryan's already signaled that in a speech last week where he talked about having, you know, well, you know, the our debt, our national debt is going to explode. And we're going to have to look at some of these entitlement programs.
And what about
we know that was coming.
What about the climate issues? You want to talk about the health of a child? What about the climate issues, the long-term health of children? So let's be fully committed to the full health and well-being of children, and then let's have an honest conversation.
Benjamin says, my 11-year-old son said to me the other day that he should not know what sexual harassment is at his age. I thought about it for a moment and realized that boys of his age should be educated about respecting the rights of the opposite sex. When do we begin to have this conversation with our children?
We can, men, okay? Men can take ownership over the issue, and we can change the culture that's out there if we're teaching each other and also teaching our young boys how to respect for young ladies.
Sure, 11 years old is not too young.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, Richard says, hi, panel. I'd like to hear Alan or anybody's take on growing up non-Christian and hearing Christmas music constantly as a child. Just never really considered it before. And that's what WAMC does for me. It puts thoughts in my head. Thanks from Richard in Corinth. Well, you know, I like to pick my fights. You know what I mean? Here's Trump. Here's these other guys. I have no problem with it. I've never had any problem with it. You know, the fact of the matter is I consider it to be music. That's all. Just music. It goes in my ears and out of my ears. Now, I know there are people who will feel very differently about it, you know, than I do. But I think there are so many fights we can have. That ain't the one I'm particularly interested in.
A good Mitch Miller song is, you know, right?
Well, and you know, separation of church and state, I don't know if it applies to a reindeer with a light bulb on his nose.
Yeah.
Well, but just Silent Night.
No, I understand that. Yeah, I understand that. But there is a difference, I think.
Part of joy to the world.
You know,
let it snow.
My little town last year or 2 years ago made national news when the leadership there decided to remove the Merry Christmas signs from the little town of Bethlehem. And my brother-in-law from Atlanta called me up and said, is this true? And I said, yes, it's true. And I'm sorry you had to read that. But I think we're just taking ourselves a little too seriously.
Well, along those lines, if I may, for many years, a couple of years anyway, that awful O'Reilly man, you know, Bill O'Reilly, he started to pick on my little town of Great Barrington because it didn't put up the appropriate Christmas ornaments on the town. And here's what I have to say. Forget it, Bill O'Reilly. Look where you are now.
Yeah.
Mr. Moralistic guy.
And instead of having less, why don't we hear more music and from more different religions and cultures? Let's broaden it out as opposed to narrow it.
Sure.
And speaking of Bill O'Reilly, how come all of the New York Times, everything, all these articles, anyway, let's go ahead and read
it. No, finish your thought.
I was thinking about the article in the New York Times about all the people who have left for sexual harassment, and they all start with Harry Weinstein. Why don't they start with Bill O'Reilly and Fox News? Yeah. Why have everybody's forgotten about that? Of course,
Roger Ailes.
Right. Why is that the line? Why are they forgotten about the Fox News? Anyway,
yeah.
That's
well,
just
I just want to say in response to the very good idea about Moore, in breath, as you know, there's only, as far as I'm concerned, only one group that ever deserves mention in terms of music, and that's the Weavers. And the Weavers at Carnegie Hall, Pete Seeger and Lee Hayes and all the rest, and Ronnie Gilbert and Fred Hellerman, they always mixed them all up. You know, We Wish You a Merry Christmas, and then there was all the Hanukkah songs. Great stuff. I recommend that to everybody.
Let's hear it all.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Doreen says, this is Doreen from Poughkeepsie.
Hello.
Hi, Doreen.
Hi, Doreen.
It was refreshing to see New York Police Department Commissioner James O'Neill on television Sunday morning speaking out against the Concealed Carry Reciprocity Act. There's still some sanity in this world. Am I wrong, David? Because I mentioned the Sullivan Act the other day on the radio, and I didn't know whether I was right or wrong. Is there still a Sullivan Act that no concealed weapons? Do we know that?
Well, like I said, in the state of New York, it is a very, very strict state in order for you to get carry and conceal. And I think if you actually sit down and you talk to law enforcement, what they're concerned about is, you know, here we have a rigorous process and a well vetted process. We definitely, you know, make sure through the justice system that if you're going to be given this particular, you know, authorization, sure, that you're going to be well vetted. It's the lack of confidence that this is taking place in other states, because we know it's not.
I talked with a guy named Umansky down at the John Jay College years and years and years ago, and he was quoted, I believe it was in the Village Voice, as saying a cop came in and was very angry at him for his liberal views and was fidgeting with his gun. And he mentioned it to the other officers afterwards and said, don't worry, Teach, we had him covered. Mm-hmm. So anyway, there is a bad story. Panel says, David, I'm against the proposed changes to the concealed gun carry policy. However, it may make sense to have a tri-state agreement, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut. I don't see the urgency of someone from Florida, Iowa, or Montana getting to carry the gun in New York. Or, well, you better think about that again, because I'm sure that's going to happen. Yeah. I mean, people are already coming up here with guns purchased in West Virginia, that kind of thing, and using them. Okay, and Barbara says, legal question. That's for you, David, because you're the only lawyer. If someone comes into the state that has a no-carry law and commits a crime with that gun, can that state or victim sue the federal government or the state that allowed the weapon to be carried over the border? Well, the answer clearly, no, without my being a lawyer, is no. Nevertheless, I get the point you're trying to make.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I mean, I think one of the things that we see, unlike any other product, is the protection that's provided for the gun manufacturers in product liability cases. I mean, if you were to get a car or any other product in this country where there was some kind of defect or it was used to harm, you know, there's probably a good chance that you could sue the company and come away with something, but not for handguns or weapons. They're protected.
All right. I want to... we have about 5 minutes, and so I want to talk about the tax bill and the rush, although I thought initially I did want to talk about the extraordinary story that was in the New York Times over the weekend about the preservation of Donald Trump. That is quite a story, which basically said that between 4 and 8 hours of a day is spent watching television. He has a Super TiVo. Drinks a lot of Diet Cokes. Can't blame him on that. And
what's the Super TiVo?
The Super TiVo is that's what he refers to it as. But if he misses, so he'll watch Don Lemon at night, or he'll watch us. He'll go over to Morning Joe because he likes to be sort of stoked. He likes to get mad at the TV.
He's fueled by grievance.
He's very angry. He still feels that he's been aggrieved in this situation of being president. He still gets very, very excited when he hears his name on television, or if he sees it in print, and it's an extraordinary article. Maggie Haberman and
Who was the other? There's three.
Glenn Thrush was back, I see.
Three, Glenn Thrush, Peter Baker, and Maggie Haberman. It's with Twitter as his Excalibur, the president takes on his doubters, powered by long spells of cable news, a dozen Diet Cokes. But if Mr. Trump has yet to bend the presidency to his will, he is least wrestling it to a draw. It's an hour-by-hour battle for self-preservation, and that's what this,
it was
this
a
article...
Great, it was a great piece. Great piece, and I would recommend it to anybody because it sort of has its psychoanalytic overtones to it as to who this guy really is. I mean, can you imagine the punishment of sitting in front of a television for hours every day when you're the president of the United States and thinking again and again and again and listening to these people come after you with everything they got and still yelling at the television? It doesn't seem right to me. Now, with that said, I said on this air, and I mean it, that the runaway economy right now is going to be good for Trump. And his numbers are going up. 44% of the people in the United States approve of the way that Trump is handling the economy. I say that to you all because, you know, I'm sure that he is counting on good old American greed and everything else to carry him to a higher place.
Go ahead.
I had three thoughts. One has to do with... you know, I think it's just a reminder that he's just not presidential. But the second thing is that the problem is all this focus is it's about him, whereas a president, a leader, it should be about the country. I know that's Pollyannish, but we should be worried not about what he's watching or what he's drinking, but what's happening in the country, what's in his tax bill, what's in his budget bill. You know, we may pass, hopefully they'll just continue resolution, but they may pass within a week a major budget bill, and no one's even discussing what's the priorities in it. The third thing I want to talk about is bullying. That, you know, it's just a reminder about his bullying behavior. There was an amazing video that went viral, a young kid named Keaton Jones, K-E-A-T-O-N. If you haven't seen this Keaton Jones video that's gone viral, take a look at it. But it's a young kid who's been bullied at school. His mother goes to pick him up and gets the video of him talking. And it's just a reminder of how damaging bullying is and how hurtful and horrible it is.
But don't you think that this piece over the weekend explains a lot about who he is and why he engages in the conduct that he engages?
We not know that? I mean, we've been seeing it for.
But I think it's as simple. I think the piece over the weekend just captures what most of us already know about him. But at the same time, it's also frustrating when you see intellectuals trying to analyze what we know is a simple person who is absolutely obsessed with his person with grievance and will continue to litigate this issue about his campaign.
We have to go and we're out of time, but take Alan's advice and read the article. It's really quite something, and some very good reporting in it. Alan Chartok, David Soares, Teresa Bourgeois, thank you all for joining us this morning. We'll be back after this.